The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. Possible on a pain-free Friday, hanging out a bad seat, a broken date, a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad actors, bad tape, bad lie, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell Palatial right across the river and through the woods from where Granny loves to have a little of that Orange Julius 75% cartridge when she's drinking shots of JMO in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh, people dress in plastic bags, directed traffic, some kind of fashion, shake it up, should do. But all my friends that come around, flats and flats and party up, rats on the west side, bed bugs of town, with the best of tides of tatter. I'm brains splattered all over Manhattan, should do be shake it up. What's gigging? It's Farrell with Mafia tonight. And I was watching the Nets lose again to the Cavaliers. I mean, to tell you, like, how pathetic is Brooklyn's defense. I mean, it is just sickening. I'm sitting there watching, and all night long, they play no defense whatsoever. This is like a broken record. Wednesday night, Mafia, we did the show. They didn't play any defense. They lost in double overtime and gave up 147 points tonight. 125-113. They lose again. And the Cavs are the lowest scoring team in the league. And they're scoring .147 and .125 against the Nets. I mean, to tell you, it is stunning to me. They have no size, no rebounding, no defense, and I mean whatsoever. Absolutely none. And you get Kyrie having 38. What does it matter? Harden had 19, 5, and 11, but I mean, it's unbelievable. They shoot 48%. For the game, but they give up 51% and 125 points, and they give up five guys in double figures, Nance, Drummond, and he had a double-double, 19 and 16, Sexton, 25. Now, remember, he had 42 the other night in the double overtime game and then turns 25 on him. I mean, young bull getting off. Prince, Torian Prince, former Net, he has 14, and Garland had 11. Wait, Allen, throw him in there too. They had six guys in double figures. Froman had six boards, 19 points, 7 of 9 from the floor. I just have to look on here to see, and he didn't have any blocks tonight, but usually he does have blocks. I mean, it's so embarrassing. It really is. Listen to this team they have. I mean, basically, Joe Harris, who's supposedly this great shooter, he has 8 points, 3 of 9 from the floor. Jordan is their only big. He had 9 points and just 4 rebounds. Kyrie has the 38 and 5 dimes. Kyrie shot 14 of 24, 4 3-pointers, 6 of 6 from the line. Harden shot 6 of 14. Brown was 4 of 8. Green was 5 of 9 from the floor, 1 of 3 from downtown. He had 13 points. They bring this rookie in, Perry. He's awful. I mean, they are awful. We welcome in all of our radio affiliates on Sirius XM channel 204 on satellite. The Sports Grid Radio Network on there now, every day, all day, always. And Mightier 1090 in San Diego and all of Southern California, from Baja to the Canadian Rockies. What's happening out in California? Yeah. And Sports Map Radio Network and Sports Byline USA and Armed Forces Radio. Good to have you with us on the bench tonight. I'm Pharrell with Mafia. So, honestly, Maf, there is no way that team, I mean, no way in hell do they win an NBA championship. I mean, I will bet my life that they couldn't even, that's not a playoff winning team just because you can score. Just because you can score and because you can have Harden have a big night, or Kyrie and Harden have a big night, or all three of them, Durant, put him in there and they all three have a big night, or one of them has a huge night and the other two do decent. It doesn't matter what chess piece you move. When you don't rebound, play defense at all, and you have no size, which is another, a way of looking at equating the rebounding problem. They don't rebound. They don't. They do nothing on the defensive end. Nothing at all. Any team can go right through them like butter, melted butter. I mean, I'm sitting here watching them. Are you kidding me? 147 and then 125. Does that not put up a billboard in the middle of Times Square that says we suck?
It absolutely does. I mean, and you could say, you know, with certain teams, it's like, oh, well, you know, these guys are just getting together. They don't know how to play together yet, you know, with the defense. They got to work the system, all that kind of stuff, get used to each other. You can't say that with that team. Harden's never played defense. Kyrie's never played defense. It doesn't matter how much time you give them. Those guys are not going to play defense, and that's going to be their Achilles heel.
So if they played tomorrow, like, do you remember I was talking about they played and beat the Bucks, 125-123. I'm telling you, in a 7-game series, they lose to the Bucks in 5 or 6 at worst. It's Pharrell on a bench.
If sports talk stations were cars, we'd be the one that you drove the wheels off of in high school, cruising for chicks and going to the game on Friday nights, then forgetting where you parked it till Saturday morning and you had to get your buddy to drive you around looking for it.
I think I see it, man.
This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Feel it. Doggy dog. 844-843-6879 is the number to get on the bench. So I was pretty hot tonight, Mafia, all things being equal in the NBA. By the way, the Nets, we talked about how bad they are. The Celtics are just as bad as they are. I mean, they really are. Without Jason Tatum in that lineup, they suck. I mean, the Sixers kicked their ass again 2 nights in a row that they played. They went Wednesday, Friday, kicked their ass both games, did it again tonight, beat them by 12. I mean, it's embarrassing. I mean, they are awful. I don't care what anybody says. Take a good look. I was watching them. They couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, and Smart was trying to drive on Embiid and do things because they had their little – you know, riff the other night, calling each other floppers. Unbelievable. They are just as bad as the Nets. I mean, honestly, the Nets play no defense, and the Celtics have one guy, basically, Jaylen Brown. That's it. They have one guy that can score. Without Tatum, they're nothing. The Hawks just blew out the Timberwolves, 116-98. I hit the Hawks to win, Sixers to win. I hit the Cavs spread, Pacers to win. They went in overtime, 120-118 over the Magic. I hit the Rockets with the upset in Detroit. I thought it was an upset, 103-102. And I don't know what the line was on that game. But I was getting three. They win by one. I had the Bulls winning outright in Charlotte, getting 3.5, 4. It was 123-110, Bulls win. And there's another thing I have to say. LaVine had 25 tonight. You know, he can burp and score 25. Markkanen had 23. Temple, 15. Porter Jr., 13. And Cody White had 18. Look, Zach LaVine, I keep hearing about, you know, are they going to trade him before the deadline? Can you imagine trading a guy that scores 28 points a game? Like, seriously, like, that's that young? Seriously, there's a couple things I just can't have. I can't have Zach LaVine get traded if I'm running. If I'm, honestly, can you imagine Billy Donovan and they're, you know, they bring him into a meeting, the front office, and we're going to trade Zach LaVine. 28 a game, top five scorer in the league. And I know people will say, oh, well, look what they can get for him. They can't do anything to save that team other than to build it from where it is. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, you want to trade people, trade Valentine, trade Temple, trade Porter. You know, you really want to make a move. I like Cody White. Trade him. I like his game. Trade him. Somebody would want him. You don't like Zach LaVine's 28 a game? Markkanen, trade his ass. He's as white as they come. So, whatever. I don't trade Zach LaVine for anything. Nothing. I mean, score, I build Scott. The franchise. Yeah, what?
He scores, but he does it efficiently, too. I mean, the guy shot 8 of 12 today to get that 25. For the season, he's shooting 49.8%. The guy shoots 50%. So it's not even like he's one of these guys like Harden. These other guys that jack up 30 shots to get 30 points. Like, he can get 25, 30 points with 12 shots.
I know, like, I don't, it makes no sense to me at all. And I have to go back to the, and I really do have to go back to this. I know they wanted Harden, and I know they got him. And I know they gave up the franchise to get him. And they gave up, like, literally every draft pick forever till 2027. They're naked at the altar, right? But I would have never in a million years, I really don't like the Allen deal to Cleveland. I really don't. I just, they needed that guy so badly on this team. When they had him, they had Jordan and Allen. Allen's young ass legs, 7-footer, dunker, shot blocker galore. He had the mini hook going. He can score in the paint. He can do everything. He can run. He can jump. He can fly in transition. Swat a shot, get to the other end, and dunk it. He must have had 6 dunks tonight against his old team, the Nets. And it made me sick to my stomach seeing them trade him. And then even, I was on the toilet bowl after I watched him, you know, 2 nights in a row just dealing on the Nets. That guy, Mafia, was so good and becoming so much better as a player from year to year. From last year, he came into his own. This year, he really took a couple of steps up into the penthouse area, you know, to have drinks. He couldn't stay in the penthouse, but he had to go back down to the, you know, 14th floor. But the bottom line is that guy's on the up. And I'll tell you what, they showed footage of him, you know, because they're jonesing without him. They showed footage of him tonight as a Net, like, you know, whatever they call him, those, you know, let's celebrate his time with the Nets and do a little video montage of his time with Brooklyn and then, you know, say thank you to him, right? And it was like a tribute. Meanwhile, they showed him blocking every single guy in the league. LeBron swatting him, swatting Giannis, swatting every guy in the league. Every guy that matters in the league, he blocked at least once. And I'm sitting there, I'm like,
the bench. I believe in whipped cream with every.
So I actually have footage of the voicemail that I left at the Nets front office for the GM Marks when I heard that Allen was part of the deal. I had had enough, so I left him a message.
You've just got to go ahead and replace the captain of your brain ship because he's drunk at the wheel.
I didn't leave my name or anything to like call me back, that like, you know, my name or number. I just left him that vague message of that, you know, he had lost his mind and that I hated him forever, like purposely hated him forever. All I know, I'm watching the Knicks now, Mafia. They're playing the Kings in Sacktown. I don't know what was going on before the game. Did you see the Sacramento, like, I don't know, Twitter department making fun of the Knicks? They had, their city jerseys on, and then they showed the Knicks city jersey, and it had the whole city draped over their front and back, trying to, like, troll the Knicks. Like, what's that about? Like, what do the Sacramento Kings give a rat's ass about the New York Knicks?
Well, you know what? That's the only thing they could win is Twitter wars, because they can't win games no matter what they do. That team has been bunk for as long as I've been alive. Ever since your boy White Chocolate and Vlade Divac, you know, got out of Sacramento, that team has sucked. So that's the only winner they can win. Only thing they can win is Twitter wars.
Well, listen, I don't even care about all the Twitter. All I know is, like, can you let's just be honest here. Sacramento's a lovely area. it's a lovely area. And I've always liked being on the radio in Sacramento. I've been on there for a long time. You remember, Mafia, KHTK 1140. I was on that station for a long time. I like Northern California. I like Sacramento. Do not get me wrong. But let's just leave it right there when it comes to comparing Sacramento to New York City. Can you imagine?
They're not even wearing those
jerseys.
Can you imagine? The Knicks are wearing their regular Knicks jerseys. What?
I mean, you aren't the toe jam in my big toe compared to New York City. I mean, honestly, you are like the toe crust jam in the corner of my toenails compared to New York City. I mean, honestly. What city? Mafia, there's, you know, all these other cities. Sacramento thinks they can dance with us? New York City? I mean, you're not even as big as Harlem. I mean, honestly. Sacramento giving New York the business. That is funny. I mean, honestly, the women here in New York could beat your ass. I'm not even kidding you. They would beat your ass, these chicks here in New York City. They are tough. Knock you over. Get a little social D, come on. Oh, they love that social D on the bench. 844-843-6879 to get on the bench. Our good buddy Jason Cole jumps onto Mahogany now to wax up on a pain-free Friday, getting ready for the title games on Sunday. How you doing, Jason?
Oh, life is beautiful. How you doing, Pharrell?
I'm turning the corner, bro. So when you saw these matchups and how they came about last week, and you know what happened with you know, Mahomes and everything, and then Chad Henne got him into the game, and now they're taking on the Bills, and then you got Tom Brady knocking off Breeze, and they picked him off three times, and now Brady's playing in another title game with a shot to go to another Super Bowl. What was your first inclination when you saw these matchups for Sunday?
Well, the first inclination is hoping that Mahomes is going to play, because you know, you want to make sure this is a fair fight. And, you know, fortunately, that news has come out that he will play, so we're in good shape. I thought, like, we're going to have a pretty classic Super Bowl, especially if the Chiefs win. Like, this is good. I think that no matter who wins in the Battle of the Bays, as long as you got the Chiefs on the other side, like, I think it's going to be a really, really fascinating Super Bowl. And the Bills are okay if they get in there. Kind of a nice little Cinderella story. But I'm just looking at this saying, God, give me Mahomes against either one of Rodgers or Brady. Like, that just screams huge game to me. It screams just quarterback duel. It screams like 38-35 as a possible outcome. I just love that. Love this possible matchup.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. If it comes down to that, either or, you know, Rodgers or Brady against Mahomes, it's just top shelf. And then if it's Buffalo, it's more of a, you know, nobody respects them. Nobody thought they'd be here. No one, mm-hmm. you know, likes us. It's us against the world. I'm so sick of that in sports. I really am. Like every game, it's always someone crying about no one respects us. I mean, how do you not respect a team that wins 15 games?
Yeah, but let's say this. Buffalo's, you know, they've got that 0-4 hanging over. It's sort of like when the Broncos came back or they were facing Green Bay, right, in the 97 season. And everybody comes into that and goes, oh, God, the Broncos are here again. They've lost 4 Super Bowls. You know, Elway's going to lose again. He's going to lose for the 4th time. And the team's going to lose for the 5th time. I remember this story about Elway, his mother, after they won the AFC Championship that year in that game against Kansas City. She comes back and she goes, do we really have to go to the Super Bowl? She was afraid that we were going to lose, right? So you got a little bit of that with the Bills, I think, to the same extent. But, you know, you got the young quarterback, and it becomes fun that way. But I don't know. I'm just really hoping that Kansas City wins. I really want to see Kansas City play really hard for two straight games, right? Like, I really want to see them play hard on Sunday and then really hard in the Super Bowl, because that's the one team that I just think they're a step ahead of everybody else. Now, defensively, they're still going to give up points, but if Mahomes is healthy and they go at it and they're really sharp, like, that's really fun offense to watch play. And I don't think there's a defense left that can really stop them.
I went to that Super Bowl, that Elway Super Bowl against Green Bay, right, in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was it.
There.
It was a good game,
we were both there.
I was there. Yeah, we were both there. Now, the story I want to tell you, though, which was great, was that I went with a really hot chick. And so I thought I could get my dad into the game, right? Now, listen. I thought I could get my dad into the game. And my dad flew out from Pittsburgh to San Diego. We hung out for like 4 days, whatever, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm like, don't worry about it. We'll get a ticket. Don't worry about it. We'll get a ticket. And then it came down to it, you know, we were in the parking lot and all other avenues had been exhausted and we didn't have a ticket. And then we tried to scalp a ticket and we couldn't get a ticket. So at the end, I had 2 tickets and I was like, look, I said, I got this hot chick here and I'm not giving you my seat. I'm going in with this hot chick. So it's nice seeing you. Bye. Go to the airport. So my dad left, never talked to me again for like at least a year. And then I went in with the hot chick to the Super Bowl. And then during the Super Bowl, I was sitting like in the end zone, like in the first row. And they kept showing me on national television, not me. They kept showing the hot chick with me. And so I was willing to dump my father. Yeah, but I gave my dad the boot over the hot chick. You got to like the power play move there, Jason. Like, you love your father. You look up to your father, but you still screw him over.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? He should have respected that. He really should have. He shouldn't have been angry with you.
He didn't.
He should have said, son, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. And he should have stood by you in that moment.
Yeah. She had tremendous features that bore very well on national television, and it was all happening
I think most of the women that I've heard you date have impressive features, or as they said, Python and the Holy Grail, huge tracts of land.
Yes, and I also had a nice buzz on that day, but I remember. That was fantastic. Wasn't that when, am I crazy? When he had the helicopter touchdown in that game, your boy Elway that you wrote your book about.
Exactly. It wasn't a touchdown, but it was a 3rd down and 6th play that was critical. It set up the touchdown. that was critical to them keeping momentum in that game. And so, yeah, he had a huge, huge play in that game. And the whole read on that play and everything that went into it.
So what do you think of him, before I get back into these games, what do you think of him, like, I don't know, unless I'm crazy, he gave up some power, right, and hired a GM?
I think he gave it a good run for 10 years. And I think it got to the point where, look, he lost the touch over the last 5 years, you know, the same touch that he had done to put together and make him into a champion. He's got a year left on his contract. I think there are some things going on in the background that we don't necessarily understand, if that makes sense. In other words, I think Elway is sitting there going, okay, if the Bolins keep control of this team, I could probably stay on. If the Bolins don't keep control of this team, I'm staying on because he's probably going to put together a group that will buy the Broncos. And that doesn't mean he's going to be running football again. You know, they're still going to have George Payton there. And I think he doesn't want to do that anymore. But one way or another, I don't think we've seen the end of John Elway being associated with the Broncos.
So you think, like, at some point he's going to own a big fat piece of that team?
I think that's a distinct possibility. I'm not saying, and I wouldn't say a big fat chunk of it. He's not worth multiple billions of dollars. That team is worth, I don't know, is it $2.5, maybe close to $3 billion. I don't think he has that kind of money, but I think he has enough money to make some things interesting. And he has a group of friends, lots of really powerful, rich friends who certainly can make it interesting.
Do you think Sean McDermott can out-coach Andy Reid somehow and, like, that they can actually go in there? And I know you said you want Kansas City to go, but do you think that Allen and McDermott can draw up enough sophistication passing? Because they don't run the ball. They're just going to throw the ball 60 times. Do you think they can actually pull it off and beat Reid, that McDermott could out-coach him?
No, I don't think it's a matter of being out-coached. I mean, unless you talk about getting your team emotionally charged to play in this game, part of coaching, which I think is certainly a good argument, right? Like, so is Reid going to have them on edge and make them understand, you know, how close it is that they could come to losing this game? Because the one thing that you have seen from Kansas City ever since that game against Baltimore early in the season, I think it was week 5, when they just trounced Baltimore on a Monday night, and, you know, basically, you know, sent them back into reality, and, you know, showed, hey, look, you know, Lamar Jackson is not as interesting as you think, and Pat Mahomes is clearly the best quarterback in the league, you know, on a year-by-year basis. I would say the one thing about Kansas City is, are they not going to be focused enough and, you know, focused enough on their execution that they're going to allow what happened against Cleveland, which is they get up 19-3 instead of scoring touchdowns on all four or at least three of those four possessions where they scored, you know, 2 touchdowns, 2 field goals. You know, they just kind of squander some opportunities, really put the game away early. Cleveland hangs around. Cleveland even makes a gigantic mistake with that fumble through the end zone. And then all of a sudden Cleveland's right in position where, you know, they don't get the fourth down. This game could flip pretty easily. And Kansas City's been playing like that all year. Well, if you play like that against Buffalo, you can basically have a problem. And that's where, to me, Buffalo could take control of this game. I don't know that that's out coaching as much as it is the Chiefs not maintaining control.
All right, Jason, hold that thought. We'll come back and break it down a little more and talk about the Packers and Buccaneers game. And I want to ask him some questions about the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Writers Association awards, of all the awards that went out this year.
You're listening to the source of live odds, line matchups, injury reports, and news you can use. But we just call it
the Winning Edge.
Keep it here.
There's plenty to go around.
This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Oh,
don't care.
Oh, yeah, Lemmy, get it. Lemmy, when he died, it was a lot like all these legendary baseball guys dying, for me, anyway. That really hit me hard today, Hank Aaron. I told the story on Coast to Coast on TV on Sports Grid that I knew him. I got to meet him and hang out with him a couple times in Atlanta and interview him several times when I worked in Atlanta three different times. So the guy was just larger than life. Like, when you were near him, it was like being, I guess, in a room with God. And then again, we've had stories on this show over the years that seeing Lemmy at, you know, clubs in on the Sunset Strip drinking in the corner of the bar, legendary bars in L.A., that also is pretty cool. And then Lemmy went off to heavy metal heaven, and that just sucks. Anyway, we're talking to Jason Cole, author, writer extraordinaire, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Does that put you in the, because I'm not that smart, as you know, does that put you in that Pro Football Writers club too? Are you in that club too? Do you got your parking pass and your locker and your free drink in the 18th hole with the Pro Football Writers?
Yeah, we get little, so we get little like backpacks that we give up, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Did you vote for Brandon Bean for the Executive of the Year and Brian Daboll as the Assistant Coach of the Year?
Those I did not vote for. This week, on Tuesday, we did the Pro Football Hall of Fame voting, which was really cool. But I don't do the off-season awards. I'm not in that group of writers that does it, because it's usually just a writer from each one of the city that covers a team. That's how those are done. So Daboll and Bean, I didn't do those ones, but I thought it was fairly deserving on both of those counts.
Okay, so tell me how the can you tell me how you did the Pro Football Hall of Fame voting for Canton this year? What did, can you?
Sure,
tell
I can. I can describe it. Yeah, we had the slate of 15 guys, and you know, Manning and Charles Woodson at the top of it. We gathered at 9:30 in the morning on Friday, you know, East Coast time. And so you've got 49 selectors, and then you have people from the Hall of Fame. And we discuss each and every one of the candidates. And some of the discussions are, you know, sometimes, you know, 30, 35, 40 minutes. You know, and then sometimes they're very brief. Like Peyton Manning was 7 seconds. So it literally was 7 seconds. Because, what is there to talk about,
so
right?
That's a done deal. Right, that's a done deal.
Yeah, and come on, let's not kid each other. You know, am I going to say, is he in the Hall of Fame? I can't tell you that. But maybe, right? Come on. Yeah, like, there's no discussion. And there was nobody said, why aren't we talking about it? It's like, just move on. You know, we know what we're doing. And then I don't want to get too deep into the other ones. You know, the Manning one is obvious, and that happens every once in a while, probably every 4 or 5 years, something like that. There's one of these guys. Brett Favre was like that. Marino, Walter Payton was like that. Jerry Rice was like that. Deion Sanders. Where you just stand up, the person says, I present Peyton Manning, right, or Brett Favre. Thank you. And that's it. So it's done. But the rest of them, you know, the rest of them are a discussion. I think there are guys who are obviously, you know, got a far more support than others. I do an annual survey, and Charles Woodson got 88% support on that annual survey. I think that's a pretty good indicator that Charles Woodson's probably going to get in. But again, it's not, you know, it's not a lock pipe cinch. Let's just put it that way.
Do you, I want to ask you, like, if you were to, like, right now, just tonight, based on his body of work, would you vote Philip Rivers into the Hall of Fame? Do you think he's a first bout, or do you think he's, like, down the road type of guy?
Well, you kind of have to know who else is. A lot of it depends on who else is in the group of 15, right? If you don't have a really incredibly strong group of 15, and we've had years like that where, like, there's nobody who really just jumps off the page it just says this guy has to get in. Like, you know, Junior Seau got in first ballot, and you could say Junior Seau deserves to go first ballot, right? But I would just say that the overall group was just not that overwhelmingly strong that that guy absolutely should get in, right? And last year we had Palomalu who got in, and he was a good candidate, and, you know, he was the best of that group, but it just didn't scream, you know, walk in, you're the guy. And I sort of want to know who else is going to be in that group with Rivers. So I think it suffices to say he might get in first ballot. Is he going to get in first ballot? Is he going to get in, period? I think it's all over the map. Like, if you were to vote between Eli Manning and Philip Rivers, what would you do?
I would,
you know,
put
or, you
Eli
know,
Manning.
When Eli Manning, you really would. Like, it's easy for you, huh?
Well, I just think that he beat Brady and Belichick twice in the Super Bowl, and that's all it takes. And same thing with Roethlisberger. You go to three Super Bowls and win two of them, and then you throw the pass to Holmes to win the Arizona game, you're in. You got two rings, and you throw for the mileage that he did. It's the same thing with Rivers. Rivers threw for all the, you know, top five. He was number five all time and all this, never missed a game and all the rest. If they're going to do it on stats, nobody can argue with what Roethlisberger's done, and he racked up two rings. It's over. He gets in. Simple as that.
Well, what about Manning? But Manning is the same thing to you. Like, the two Super Bowls are enough.
Well, I just think
that even though the rest of his career is kind of inconsistent. I'm not saying I'm not voting for Eli Manning. I'm saying
right.
I want to hear the discussion on Eli Manning. Like, I'm not sitting here going, yeah, it's just a lot. It's, you know, automatic to me. It's because it's just not. I just kind of sit there and go, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure whether you don't rubber stamp. Now, do I think he's going to get in? Probably. But, you know, I also look at some other guys who've won a couple Super Bowls as quarterbacks, like Jim Plunkett. And again, Jim Plunkett had a very different career, and I know didn't have the stats, but he did win two Super Bowls. And look, I went to the same college as Plunkett. I know Plunkett. He's a good dude. And, you know, like, I think he had a really fascinating career, the way he finished so much better than he began his career. But I honestly don't think he's a Hall of Famer. But, you know, there are people who believe in the case of Plunkett.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, like, I remember him like it was yesterday, and I put him in. I also would put Flores in for many reasons, not just his coaching, mm-hmm. but, you know, his background.
Well, he was one of the candidates who was up. He was up as in the coaching category. He was the only guy. So I think he's probably going to get in. I think it's a pretty good bet that Flores is going to get in this year.
Well, but like as far as Eli, like I said, you beat Brady and Belichick twice in Super Bowls. There's got to be something said for that. I would agree with you. The rest of his career was kind of ass, but on those 2 days, he got it done against. Brady's been nine times. He's lost three. He's won six. And look who beat him, Foles and Eli Manning twice. I mean, I think you guys, not you specifically, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours, but I think that, you know, the voting group, to be honest with you, I think they're pretty soft about those kind of stories. They'll like, oh, he beat Brady twice and Belichick twice in the Super Bowl. Boom, he's in. They fall for that stuff, if you ask me.
I'm going to say this. I don't know that, knowing this group the way I know it and hearing the arguments, because look, we spent nine hours on Tuesday arguing this stuff out. It's not an easy process. It is not without some tense moments. I mean, we're not yelling and screaming. It's polite. But there's some serious discussion here about whether guys belong, okay? And, like, you know, is this guy truly a Hall of Fame-worthy player? Yeah, I mean, it's not all just like, you know, like the Peyton Manning discussion where it's too easy. There are some tough ones here, and there's some, you know, cajoling that goes on and convincing. And I'm just saying that I think that knowing this group the way I know it and knowing my own feelings, And I like Eli Manning a lot. He's, you know, he's a good dude and all that other stuff. So, you know, as a good guy, you know, he's going to get some of that, certainly, you know, that good feeling stuff. But I've always said it like this, you know, Eli Manning had two brilliant Super Bowl runs, you know, and he played great in the playoffs all the way through, right? And that's right. Fantastic. Each one of those Super Bowl runs, and he has the Manningham throw, which is amazing, and he has, you know, the Tyree play, which is an amazing play.
Right.
But he also played a lot of his. He played a lot of his career as if he rolled out of bed at the frat house on a Saturday morning after a mega kegger on Friday, right? Like, you know, like you were like, what Eli Manning am I getting today? Am I getting the guy who throws five interceptions? Because that happened. Okay, it happened
right. More
than once, right? Or am I getting the guy who can light up somebody? And it was not consistent.
You know what? I think that Brady's on that kind of run right now where, and he has nothing to prove, but he's, you know, they won in Washington, they won in New Orleans, now he's going to Lambeau. It's a lot like that year the Giants won all the games on the road and then went to Lambeau and it was freezing 20 below, whatever the hell it was, and Strahan and that defense won that game. This kind of it reminds me of this Bucks run. I got 1 minute respectfully. What do you think, Rodgers? Are you gonna like take Rodgers? Are you gonna take Brady in this game?
Well, my temptation is to take Brady. And I think Brady himself would be fine in the cold. The problem is how are guys gonna like Evans and Godwin and the other receivers and Brady. And all these guys have played all their careers so far, you know, at least at the pro level, have played in good weather. How are they going to handle what the weather's going to look like on Sunday in Green Bay? That's just sort of what I wonder about this. And I think Rodgers had that brilliant year. This game is truly a flip of the coin. Rodgers has had a better year than Brady. So if it does truly come down to the quarterbacks, Rodgers is probably wins this one because he's been so good. Brady's been terrific. I mean, like he's done everything they've asked him to do and play more. But obviously, we're talking about Rodgers in an MVP season. And so if it comes down to him, that's probably how it goes. Now, I know that they played earlier in the season. Tampa has a good matchup against them. I think the game that they played earlier this season when Tampa ran away with it was an outlier game
right. When
it just went bad for Rodgers. But I do think that it's a hell of a matchup where Tampa has confidence in this one and the ability to play with them. And the final thing I would say is Packers are really good. They don't overwhelm me.
Yeah. All right, Jason, I love you. It's great catching up, brother. Enjoy the games on Sunday. I'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for your time and all the great stories.
Likewise, dude. All right, anytime, dude. Be good.
All right. My man, Jason Cole, hanging out with us tonight on the bench. We got more coming. All right, Pharrell on the bench on a pain-free Friday, 844-843-6879 to wax up. I'm watching the Knicks, 40-36. They lead the Kings, 6 left. Second quarter, Obi-Wan Kenobi getting some minutes in this one. And, you know, they've been hot. They actually have won 3 in a row. That's like a season for the Knicks to have a 3-game winning streak. I don't even know the last time they won 3 in a row. I mean, it's got to be years. Seriously. They never win 3 in a row. So anyway, I was looking at the Pro Football Writers Awards today when we were talking to Adam Kaplan on Coast to Coast, our NFL insider. And I'll just tell you who got them. We didn't go through the whole list today, but in terms of how they rolled out, Aaron Rodgers was the MVP. Derrick Henry was the Offensive Player of the Year. Aaron Donald, Defensive Player of the Year. Justin Herbert was the Rookie of the Year and Offensive Rookie of the Year. The Defensive Rookie of the Year was Chase Young. The Coach of the Year, Kevin Stefanski of the Browns. Executive of the Year, Brandon Bean of the Bills, and Assistant Coach of the Year, Brian Daboll of the Bills. Comeback Player of the Year, Alex Smith. Most Improved Player, Josh Allen. And so going to the Brian Daboll, Assistant Coach of the Year. So how crazy is that, that the guy gets voted by the Pro Football Writers the best assistant in the NFL? And he basically, unless I'm tripping, he didn't interview for a head coaching job anywhere. He's just going back to the Bills. How much do you have to like the Buffalo Bills to, like, they said he was going to get the Charger job. He never even interviewed for it, I don't think. They gave it to Staley. Bottom line is, the guy's the best assistant in the NFL, and he's not getting a head coaching job.